Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Dr. Hansi Ranasinghe, part of the team treating your wife.
How is she?
I'm afraid she's very unwell. She's suffering from a life-threatening condition called sepsis. You might know it as blood poisoning.
I know what sepsis is, but it can't be. We thought it was flu.
I'm afraid not.
Maybe pneumonia or something. Are you sure?
Unfortunately, there's no doubt it's sepsis. It's mounting a severe attack on her immune system.
Hi, it's Becky Wright here, otherwise known as the late Nick Grundy. As you'll know, Nick died of sepsis back in February, and as many of you are also aware, I'm walking 50k with Sarah Worker, a midwife from King's College Hospital, for the UK Sepsis Trust on the 8th of September. I am so fortunate that my encounter with sepsis was in a radio drama, because for tens of thousands of people, it's very, very real. Over 44,000 lives are lost each year to sepsis. Please help us raise awareness. You can sponsor us at www.justgiving.com/fundraising/Becky's Walk for Sepsis. You can also Google Becky's Walk for Sepsis and find us. We'd really, really appreciate your support. Let's keep Nick's death a work of fiction. Thank you.
Now,
this podcast is a Royfield Brown production. Find others on iTunes.
All right. Yeah, I know.
Hi, everyone. We're at the Toronto Dumpty Dum Meetup, and I'm Sue Yin.
I'm Dave.
Mary.
Ashok.
Victoria.
Royfield.
And now we're all going to sing.
Dum-dee-dum-dee-dum-dee-dum-dee-dum-dee-dum-dee-dum-dee-dum-dee-dum-dee-dum-dee-dum-dee-dum-dee-dum-dee-dum-dee-dum-dee-dum-dee-dum-dee-dum-dee-dum-dee-dum-dee-dum-dee-dum-dee-dum-dee-dum-dee-dum-dee-dum-dee-dum-dee-dum-dee-dum-dee-dum-dee-dum-dee-dum-dee-dum-dee-dum-dee-dum-dee-dum-dee-dum-dee-dum-dee-dum-dee-dum-dee-dum-dee-dum-dee-dum-dee-dum-dee-dum-dee-dum-dee-dum-dee-dum-dee-dum-dee-dum-dee-dum-dee-dum-dee-dum-dee-dum-dee-dum-dee-dum-dee-dum-dee-dum-dee-dum-dee-dum-dee-dum-dee-dum-dee-dum-dee
This is Dumpty Dum, the show about the reality docudrama that is centred on Abridge in the heart of the Midlands. I'm the quite grey morning suit that is Robert Wilson, and with me I have the tartan clown outfit that is...
Lucy Freeman.
And the last part of Jazza's wedding attire, folks, is you. This week's Dumpty Dum comes from lots of Canadians. Lucy, if someone wants to send us a Dumpty Dum, how can they do that?
If you would like to sing us a Dumpty Dum, leave us a plot prediction, or describe getting a D and an E at A-level as a good omen, call us on 0203 031 3105, or leave us a message on SpeakPipe. Thank you to Cosmo for his podcast roundups and for doing the Dumpty Dogs, Shambridge for her voices, Mike Hatton for his character counts, and to Derek there in the back bedroom. Derek really enjoyed Fallon and Harassment's wedding, but sadly he was asked to leave when the music started. They played Come On Eileen. He took it as instruction, and Fallon's auntie Eileen complained.
Oh, you see, that's the danger of also having the script in front and reading ahead. I'm laughing ahead of cue. I can only apologise. How many times will I have to do that?
At least you laugh, love. I don't care when you laugh, as long as you laugh. That's it.
This week, we hear from Bernie, from Mim, from Glyn, and from Vicky. Not necessarily in that order. But first, before the caller inners, let's brace ourselves for this week's Lucy V. Freeman's Week in Ambridge.
We We began the week with a llama drama. A mysterious hand had left a llama in Fallon's back garden. Krusty rushed around panicking and even bellowed, "You can't go now, Harassment. We need your expertise." Expertise? Maybe you can find llamas as they're bigger than Bunting. Bizarrely, though, the llama did seem to like him, even though he managed to sound a bit like a serial killer when he talked to it. "Let me put this round your lovely neck." The llama theft, of course, resulted in a whodunit, or a who cares, to be strictly accurate. Harassment was as thorough as ever, beginning the tactful questioning with Alice. "Well, the general consensus seems to be that you're a massive pisshead, so we automatically assumed it was you, you massive pisshead." He then found out it was Susan, and still no one cared. Meanwhile, in an unlikely partnership, Freddy the Fingers Pargeter had formed a bond with Alistair as they were both prisoners at the stables, chained by the elbows to a hay bag with Shula occasionally throwing pony nuts at their heads as she passed by. After the oh-so-classy Jeremy Kyle screaming match in the pool room of the Bull, "Leave it, Shula, he ain't worth it," Alistair made a break for it by pretending to be Aziz and cantered off with Lillian on his back, and arrived at Jimmis's house and resumed his rightful place, sleeping under the soft pedal of the piano. Then a cow had a hurty boob and he had to go to Brooker's, which was a bit tricky. Hootie could scarcely control her eagerness to give him a good ticking off. Her high horse was stamping and snorting away, and Alistair did manage a half-hearted, "It's nothing to do with you," when he could have added, "I'm no longer part of your family. However, just to recap, a member of your own actual family is currently awaiting a trial at the Crown Court for drug dealing and thereby making money out of the miserable addiction of other addicts, you hypocritical old bint." He was consoled later by two things. He cried as Jazza gave him his own room and agreed to sleep on the piano in his stead. Alistair told him about his emergency vet visit to Brookfield. "Was the cow okay?" asked Jazza. "No, she didn't even give me any bloody cake," he said morosely. But he cheered up even more when later on he was allowed to put on an Irish accent and pretend to be the registrar. Oh, yes, the registering of Rosie's birth, or to give her her full name, Rosie Ruth Grace Cameron Fraser Robin Fairbrother We Hate Jill Archer. Well, that's going to mean a lot of banged argadors in the Brooker's kitchen, isn't it? Good. Meanwhile, at Crime Central, Freddy got his A-level results. Even the world's biggest optimist, Johnny, has seen Freddy for the overprivileged whining get that he is. "Freddy, mate, you're not brilliant." That bit was horrible. Poor Johnny. Now he's only got a load of mute girlfriends and Tony to console himself with. Before the hearing, Elizabeth went pottering off to Usha to ask her what to do about Freddy, but it wasn't her area of expertise. Surprise, surprise. I'm struggling to discover what Usha's area of expertise actually is. So far, it's not licensing, divorce, domestic violence, attempted manslaughter or custard. What does she specialise in exactly? If it was llama theft, she could have had a whiff of some work, but even that's gone south now. Here's a tip. If you're running a stately home, and your licence has been revoked because your own son was caught and is awaiting sentencing for dealing drugs at one of your own events, on the whole, don't genuinely consider letting your dodgy brother take over the licence like a spit and sawdust pub on a council estate. It might look a bit dodgy. Even Jolene said it might look a bit dodgy, and Jolene's husband's been nicked and she's been living under an assumed name for years. Meanwhile, poor forgotten Lily is drooping. She got 84 A stars for her A-levels, which according to the Telegraph is what everyone in the world got, and standards are slipping, blah, blah, which must be so bloody motivating for all the poor sods who've just worked their asses off for the last year, being told by overpaid columnists who are clinging to their jobs at a failing newspaper that actually their qualifications are worthless. I may have digressed a little there. Where was I? Lily. Yes, Lily. Lily is cat-sitting for Truss's friends. By the sound of it, Truss was struggling to deal with all the pussies in his life, as it was. So Lily is coming home, like football, with probably the same level of success. And then the wedding. Susan was the best man, but she kindly let Chris deliver her speech. Fallon wore a dress and some shoes and some flowers and too much blusher. Jazza turned up looking like the test card for BBC Scotland. Fallon's band Little White Pies sang, and they're going on holiday to a tent in Cornwall. Fallon and Harassment, I mean, not Little White Pies. It was all very uneventful. Wayne was mute, there were no scenes, and it was actually a bit dull, which means that for the first time in Archer's recorded history, a thing was allowed to happen just as it would in real life, quietly and boringly and contentedly. And in these turbulent times, sometimes that is all you want. The end.
Hear, hear. I couldn't agree more. A lot of people, thanks for that, Lucy. A lot of people are going, "Oh, it's really boring and I wanted this to happen. I wanted it to go wrong." And I think, no, come on. It was just about right, I think. Apart from, I was a little peeved, like a few people on Twitter. I don't think it's mentioned later in the social media, but Just let Jazza wear his BBC Scotland test card.
Yes, I know, I know. Talk about manufacturing a sort of a, you know, a crisis. There wasn't one, really. He said, Fallon will go mad. You know, the whole point of what Fallon said about weddings was that she wanted everyone to do exactly what they wanted.
Yeah, but that's what all bridezillas say.
Oh, well, just before
before they destroy all the cars in the car park. And it's true. It's true. It does strange things to people. Not just women. You know, I've had best manzillas as well.
Really?
I've had. Well, if you call insisting we have a data projector and a screen so he can do a 40-minute presentation as a best man speech as going off on one, yes, that kind
Blimey.
Of thing. I know. Anyway.
See, in the old days, I was thinking about what you said about all your clients would say hurrah, hurrah, hurrah if they were told that they couldn't have booze. They had to bring their own booze and all that.
Yeah.
And then it was actually mentioned, wasn't it? Because Lizzie said, and now the caterers are really annoyed because that's where they get their get their markup from that. But I was in the old days, someone was saying the other day that you just had beer. You had no one had wine or, you know, bottles of whiskey on every table or anything. You all had beer. That was it. Beer and soft drinks for the ladies. And, you know, that's that was it. There's none of this, you know, a wine with the starter and a wine, you know, and it's just there's layers and layers of complication because it's turned into such, you know, people have just seen a way of making money out of it, and people behave as if they don't have a choice, as if they can't say no, I'm just not going to do that. It's like funerals. You don't have to have a funeral, but
no, people, especially if you haven't died.
Yeah. But, there's that lovely Jeremy Hardy line, isn't it? He said, when I die, I want to be scattered. Not cremated, just scattered.
Yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right. I mean, in my family, weddings are usually obviously register office, and then it's down to the local working men's club to peel back the tinfoil from the pork pies, the curled up sandwiches and the sausage rolls,
yeah.
And you get your own beer, you get your own John Smith's from the Formica bar.
And if you're lucky, you get a stand-up finger. That's it.
A stand-up finger. Is that the honeymoon?
Right.
That's it. Have we reached that level already? Should we just do the call?
Yes.
Okay. Well, we have some good calls this week. Not that we don't have good calls every week, but we have some new, well, at least one newbie and an old favourite. Let's start with Vicky Cole, who's coming up after we've had our little jingle.
Hello, Ambridge 3962.
Hello, everyone. Vicky Cole here. I'm very happy that the wedding went off smoothly after the failure of Lillian and Justin and Tom and Kirsty to make it to the altar. Third time lucky. That was great. Now, last week when I called in, I spoke up in sympathy for Elizabeth after losing Nigel and having to bring up teenagers all on her own. Well, I withdraw it. I retract it. I rescind it. I cancel it. Belay it. She was outrageous not to ask about Lily's exam results. I am disgusted with her. This is the scriptwriters presumably setting up the foundations for a big feud, I'm not sure, between Elizabeth and Lily, or Lily and Freddie, or all three of them in a horrible triangle. But it's unforgivable, I think. And Susan stealing a llama. Pah!
Yeah.
That's all. Bye.
Well, but don't you think that, I mean, when I did my levels, and that was, oh gosh, that was 20 years ago. No, bloody hell, 27 years, a long time ago anyway. And my mum didn't even know what I was doing. My mother didn't do O levels or A levels. She left school at 14 or whatever. Mm. She didn't know what I was doing. She just knew I was doing something.
Yeah.
And I found it really irritating when she would ask, well, when are your exams, etc. Because that adds extra pressure. Now everyone's a helicopter parent.
Yep.
And they're hovering over their child, turning the pages of their revision books, which, you know, I think is just as bad, if not worse.
Yeah. It was quite...
I still don't like Lizzie, but, you know, no. but not for that reason.
But the level of interference in I think it's gone too far now, the level of interference in your children's lives, and you will not let them fail because that reflects badly on you and makes you question any of the choices you made. So they have to do brilliantly, otherwise you look bad. You know, and you see, I mean, God, when when I was governor at a primary school, we used to see, you know, my children, they got the homework, like, you know, make a model of a London landmark. And my children would half-heartedly sellotape together two cereal boxes and coat the entire kitchen in grey paint and say it was Windsor Castle. And they had a nice time, and we talked a bit about Windsor Castle, and then we'd come in with this wobbly thing. And then some child, the child wasn't allowed to touch the thing that was made. The parent would come in with this scale model of St. Paul's Cathedral made out of matchsticks, wobbling on a cake stand. And, you know, don't come near me, And you could see the parent looking at the teacher wanting praise. And it wasn't praise for the child. It was them wanting praise. And you just thought, you are pathetic. You know, you were trying to beat a load of five-year-olds. Does that make you feel proud? Well done, you. No. Oh, God. Anyway.
There is a happy balance to be struck, isn't there?
There is.
Perhaps Lizzie didn't make that balance this week. But
but it's awful that there is that sexism there, isn't there? That Freddie is a male and therefore more likely to not get good exam results. And therefore, you know, he's the scion of the family. So he has to be sort of urged through it, coerced and cajoled, whereas Lily's just expected to get on with it and do well. And whatever happens, he's going to inherit the damn thing because he was first out of the womb. You know, it's sort of, poor Lily, is it just in a very, very horrible situation?
But that doesn't have to happen. There's no, they're not lords,
no,
are they?
That no, there's no. No
progenitor in the royal family, you know, is equal now,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah.
So why does Freddie have to inherit?
I don't know, but I mean, Lily mentioned it, didn't she? She said, well,
yeah,
you know, and to be honest, that's all he's fit for, really. But even, I wouldn't trust him to manage Stuart Loxley. He's going to need somebody, he's going to need Lily.
Yeah.
She's sort of chained for life to this idiot.
That's what's going to happen, though, isn't it? They will have to share duties and responsibilities. Mm.
Yeah.
Certainly.
Yeah.
But that won't happen for a long time. But Lizzie's, what, 50-ish?
Yeah.
Well, you know, she'll be around for another 20 or 30 years, I imagine, unless, you know, there's another raucous New Year's Eve party.
Yeah.
Llama drama, which was mentioned there.
Yes.
And you mentioned it turns out Susan was culpable.
Susan doesn't even like animals. I don't know how she would. It wouldn't pop into her head as a thing to do that.
No, but and when Harrison sent someone off, when Harrison went off to get something to make a bridle out of, and I thought, ooh, they're going to come back with the bunting, and they're going to. And then when Susan was unmasked or unmasked herself, I can't remember which way. No, Harrison unmasked her as the
because she was the only one that hadn't. Conjectured.
Yeah, the llama napper. I think we'll find out that Susan has stolen the bunting.
Did you hear the in joke the other week, by the way? When someone mentioned the bunting and someone else said, oh, I don't think anyone even remembers that.
Yeah.
Yes, I did. Like 100,000 people went, yes, we bloody do!
Yeah. Oh, well. No, I'm going to put my 20 pence. I've got my 20p here on the desk. There it is. Susan stole the bunting as well as kidnapped Constanza.
Okay.
All right. Shall we hear from Glyn now?
Yes. Hello, Dumpty Dum. It's Glyn here, just back from a couple of weeks' holiday and having binged on 2 weeks' worth of Archers. Well, Freddie Pargeter. What can we say about that? Well, I suppose next to the slim volume that is called The Profound Sayings of Joe Grundy, we must now add or start compiling the wisdom of Johnny Archer, since Johnny appears to be the only one who's spoken any sense to Freddy and has got anywhere near close for him to see the true nature of what he's been doing and the true consequences. The llama drama, well, that was all a little bit, a bit of a distraction, I think. I do hope that Susan is found out and Linda admonishes her accordingly. That will be quite a scene, I think. Harrison and Fallon's wedding, yes, it was fine. It all seemed to go according to plan, which no doubt means that the marriage itself is going to be a complete disaster. Something we can all look forward to. And finally, Shula. Shula is only going to communicate with Alistair through solicitors. Can we ask that Shula only communicates with listeners through solicitors in future? And Jill, well, I think she's lucky given the what she said to Alistair, that the baby is not going to be named something like Grace, Rabina, Tabina. Thank you very much, and keep up the good work.
Well, that was rather scathing. Can I just admit something? I don't quite understand that last bit. I understand the Grace bit, but Rabina Tabina, is it?
And Toby.
Oh, Rabina. Oh. Okay. Yeah, I'm a bit slow on the uptake. What a dimwit. So do you really think that Fallon and Harrison are going to have a successful marriage? I mean, why wouldn't they?
I do, actually. I think Fallon has learnt a lot from her mother, who handles Kenton extremely well. I think Fallon's not entering into it with any sort of doe-eyed romanticism. I think she's quite pragmatic. And I think they will. I think they'll be. And I think the actors I've been quite impressed with, Harrison's acting recently. He seems to have sort of hit his stride and he stopped over-egging it. And I just think that they're in it for the long haul as a couple. I could see us still talking about them in 20 years' time. Running the ball.
Yeah. Okay. Because he's got his sergeant exams coming up soon. Someone was saying that that Linda is going to cause more trouble for Harrison, but I was about to say this llama story doesn't have legs, the only reason they put that in is just to reveal another side to Susan and build up to the discovery of the bunting, as I said 2 minutes ago. You're not sold on this at all, are you?
No, not in the slightest.
All right. Fair enough. Shall I just give up and we'll listen to Mim?
Hello, it's Mim here, or at Mim_Monk on the Twitters. I'm a long-time lurker, but first-time caller winner. I feel a bit like a second cousin twice removed of the show, as I'm co-host of the Soggy Bottoms podcast with the lovely Kat Brown, which, if you don't know, if you've been living under a sponge, it's the British Bake Off fan podcast, and hopefully we'll be back soon, so watch this space. Anyway, rules, as I'm a first-timer. I've listened forever. Meal times growing up were kind of dictated by the Archers, and you had to sit in silence for the full 13 minutes or else. But I really kind of got into it while I was at uni because it was a really good way of keeping phone calls going with the parents, always having something else to talk about. And that was during the Great Grundy wedding debacle. So I think that makes me a George, which is a shame. Anyway, I'm calling. I mean, there were a million times when I felt like calling over the last few years. But Wednesday's episode, registering the birth, I couldn't tweet my reaction because I was driving. Well, obviously I wouldn't tweet when I was driving. Anyway, I'm rambling. But as they were talking about the middle name and Grace, and I just went, and you can't get that into a tweet, so I felt like I had to call. On a serious note, Pip, hate's a horrible word. But anyway, can't stand her. But the whole baby and maternity leave / flexible working / I'll just walk around the farm with a baby could have been a really great opportunity to get behind a kind of flexible working campaign. But it's just being mismanaged, and it's going to be horrible. And she's obviously having a horrible time. And Josh is, ugh. So obviously that's not going to be done particularly well. Anyway, I'm just rambling now. And I think that's about all I had to say. I feel like I've sped through it. But keep up the great work. It's absolutely super. I love listening on the long drives to and from work. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Well, we're not one to criticise anyone for rambling, are we, Lucy? The one thing I pick up from there is Josh, and Josh's attitude absolutely stinks. And do you think, I think it's because he's still quite immature and he's treating her like, you know, like warring teenage siblings. Yes. And she's what, 25 now, 26, something like that, with a new child. And he's still like a little 18-year-old lad with a secondhand combine harvester business.
The sibling rivalry between those two is unbelievable. It's always been bad, but it's just you kind of expect it, like you said, to be an adolescent thing and that they'd grow out of it. And occasionally they have moments, normally when the parents are a long way away, like when they were looking after the farm and the parents were on holiday, they did pull together as a team. But when there's a whiff of any sort of parental approval going around, they cannot wait to throw each other under the wheels of a bus to sort of, you know, get the pat on the head first. It's unbelievable.
And do you think that's because Pip's always had more parental approval, and so Josh is striving for?
I don't know. I mean, I don't know what she's deserved to, what she's done to deserve this kind of saint-like status, because she's made
firstborn.
It can't just be that. I think they were slightly attention starved as children. So that is something.
Which is inevitable in the circumstance.
That is something that you see in attention starved children, in that they then the sibling rivalry ramps up because when the parent is there, they are desperate to capitalise on that. But they should have grown out of it by now, for crying out loud. And also, I don't know whether, because Josh is so kind of money-minded, whether or not he's seeing Rosie as some sort of inheritance knicker or something, I don't know.
Well, surely he, in his wildest imaginings, he could envisage there being a second generation or a third generation, fourth generation or whatever, or fifth generation of archers. You know,
think,
he wouldn't be the end,
I don't,
the bottom. Of the family tree or the top, whichever.
Yeah.
But I guess, you know, it's then it sets up interesting dramatic dynamics.
But it's quite like David and Kenton, though.
Yeah, okay.
Kind of jostling for mummy, mummy, he hit me, mummy, he said this, you know, and they're still doing it and they're 50.
Well, there you go. Well, right, there you are. So we've got another 15 or 20 years of this to go. On that note, let's hear from Bernie.
Hello, you three. This is Bernie Magg, Joint Secretary of Dumpty Siblings, calling from Madrid. We still have no applicants, which in light of this week's Archers especially, i.e. lots of sibling stuff, negative and positive, is a bit of a shame, but never mind. They'll soon see the light. The negative stuff, of course, being Lily and Freddie, which is hardly surprising, the row between them, the estrangement that's clearly impending. But the lovely positive stuff was, of course, Toby and Rex. They were very sweet together this week, weren't they? And Toby's becoming the original, real, lovable rogue, isn't he? Pip is a bit daft, isn't she? Especially around Rosie barging in the way she did. I hadn't quite realised how daft she is sometimes. But I have a bit of a plot prediction around this group. I think the three of them will rub along quite nicely for a while, revolving around Rosie. Then someone will come into someone's life and the relationship will go horribly wrong and all over the place. I still think Pip and Toby will get back together again, actually, eventually. I really enjoyed Susan this week. What a star. I love the way she suddenly turns up trumps and saves the situation. Such a joy to hear her do that. And I have a request. Jazza, he was wonderful this week. But can we have a serious focus on Jazza, on his life, something to get to grips with, which isn't just the sort of voice of everyone's conscience and comic relief. Okay, keep up the good work. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Yes, Jazza was an absolute sweetheart this week, wasn't he?
Oh, he was. Not just at the wedding, but...
with Alistair.
With Alistair as well. That was above and beyond, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Oh.
Especially because they did it so well, because Alistair came in and said, what are you doing in my bed? And I thought, oh, no, Jazza's got an, you know, covered in big shitty overalls all over Alistair's postman Pat duvet cover, you know. And then it was actually a really nice thing. I thought that was very, very sweet.
Yeah.
Yes, it would be interesting to give Jazza a bit of depth, because he is such a popular character as well. And he, you know, his...
But maybe that's why he's popular, because he's
always
shallow and he's got no depth.
Yeah. Yeah.
Once you get to know people, you really start to go off from them, don't you?
We see the Grundys be the comic relief, and then they had that really, really sad storyline about moving to Meadow Rise and all that, and that made everyone see them in a different light. I forgot, we have some emails, two emails.
Oh, right.
One is from Welsh Witch. This is to do with the whole Freddie Lower Loxley saga. As I'm a relative new listener, I'm taking my info from the net, which is always a dangerous thing to do on a good day. But am I right in thinking Lower Loxley will one day be Freddie's? Yes, you are. If so, and presumably the current storyline is going to head for him getting a conviction, where does that stand with him getting an alcohol license when he eventually takes over? Surely if the license has been revoked now with Elizabeth as licensee, then he stands no chance. Does that mean Lily could step in? Now that he's 18, couldn't he challenge that? The fact that he's supposed to take over the running of Lower Loxley. Perhaps one of our legal beagles could confirm that or tell me that I dreamed that particular ruling. I hated the llama episode. All right, anyway, loving the show, blah, blah, blah. I think lots of people hated the llama episode. But yes, we need a legal person to ring in and tell us, if they can remember, what the deal is with Lower Loxley, who inherits, and whether or not Freddie can challenge a ruling that's ostensibly been made in his favour. Next, Sean Anderson, who says, a plot prediction which would also tie up a loose end. This is great. When Lillian was having her affair with Matt's brother Paul, he gave her a painting which she asked Jolene to keep for her at the ball. I expected it would reappear when Lillian was cleaned out by Matt, but it didn't. Maybe it will be discovered to be a priceless masterpiece which can be sold to save Jenny Darling's house. I had completely forgotten about the painting.
Yes. Yeah, didn't she? Because it was hanging over Paul's bed or something at one stage.
No. They were out together and he bought it.
Well, is it just over the mantelpiece in the ball now? Or is it upstairs?
I think it's upstairs because she had to keep it somewhere secret, didn't she? Where nobody could say, because Lillian had to sort of hide it.
Well, there's no need to keep it secret now.
But they've probably all forgotten that it's there or what it is or whatever.
Yeah, it's just one of those things. Now, back to the licensing.
Yes. Oh, you know this, don't you?
I mentioned a little bit on Twitter, and there is, when the licensing laws changed, so the 2003 Licensing Act, meant that you no longer have a name over the door as such. So you have a premises license, which is what Lizzie would be the owner of, the premises license. And then you need a designated premises supervisor who is like the landlord or landlady. So that's, and the two can be the same. So as far as I know, it's the DPS that needs to be qualified, that needs to do an exam and get a personal license. And that is what would be difficult for Freddie to do with a drugs conviction.
Right.
I'm not sure about being the owner of a premises license, but you'd think it would count against him for dealing E, wouldn't it? But
I know two people who've been to prison for different things, and they've both been stopped. They both can't be licensees, and they've both got the licenses in other people's names.
Yeah, but then presumably once the conviction is spent, you'll be able to go back.
No, he's still not. This was ages ago, and he's still not.
All right. Okay. Well, you've exhausted my knowledge of the law. Thank you, Lucy.
That didn't take long.
Cheeky.
Okay, shall we have some ads, or one ad, and then we'll go on to the social media roundup.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
And welcome to The Things That Made England. I'm Roy Phil Brown, and with me I have...
David Crowther of The History of England.
It was the best of time. It was the worst of time.
She was the people's princess.
She'll fight on the beaches.
Away, man. These are the things that made England.
She'll fight on the landing ground.
These are the things that made England.
I have the body, but of a weak and feeble woman.
These are the things that made England.
And a king of England, too.
These are the things that made England.
Cry God for Harry!
And these are the things that made England.
England! And St. George!
These are the things that made England.
It gives wind in Churchill's sails to say we can continue to fight on.
Well, there cannot be many more famous events in English history than 1066. It hurts, even now.
Because 1066 is important.
Yeah.
But there's aspects of modern British culture which I think get overlooked. So I'm proposing that this week we do Scar.
For me, the English flag has in the past certainly become associated with factionalism and, well, hideous racist and far-right views. And it's turned into a thing of disunity and almost xenophobia.
The idea of this show is to decide on what things that make England...
as she is, the country that, despite it all, we feel lucky to be part of.
Every week, one of us, that's David and I, will pitch an idea to the other to be designated as one of the things that makes England distinctive.
Go and join our shiny new Facebook site, where once a month we will post a poll where, should you so desire, you can make your own very suggestions for applications to the I Made England Award. So, without more ado, let's do it.
Well, Millie Bell and Yokel Bear have both run off to elope this week. They've left the social media roundup to a good friend of the show.
It's Witherspoon and Angus Haggis here, stepping in for the otherwise engaged Millie Bell and Yokel Bear to review this week's social media posts. And boy, has it been as hot as a barbecue at a 4th of July picnic. Everybody and their mother have wanted to put in their 2 cents on what's been a very busy week in our favorite village. First, the forum, which has returned to life, so be sure to check it out and add your thoughts there. Plus, you'll see that there's a lovely new photo of Lucy and a photo of Robert in his shades, looking oh so cool. Purple Pumpkin wants to know, WTF has happened to Lexi? And did Roy and Haley ever actually get a divorce? I didn't remember it happening, so I went to the Radio 4 character list, which does refer to Roy being formally married to Haley. But what of young Abby? Purple Pumpkin and David Kinsella also discussed Johnny's reaction to Freddie dealing drugs in light of Johnny having used ecstasy now and again, according to Ms. Pumpkin. I thought he only used it once in the past. The entire topic of Freddie's drug dealing and arrest preoccupied our Facebook group as well. so we'll be getting to this in greater detail shortly. Finally, on the forum, there were new posts about Emma's house dreams, and Audrianne Cabarrubias posted about Elizabeth acting as if Lily were a co-parent of Freddie and not her own child. Yes, this is another big topic on our Facebook page, so let's turn to Mark Zuckerberg's cash cow now. First, we start with last week's llama drama. While Hannah Mae loved it and Martin Vandenhoevel requested an all-animal episode in the future, I think it's safe to say that most people were underwhelmed by the crime. Vicky Cole thought it very silly, Claire Asbury said it was ridiculous, and Steve Gibbs declared it a llama drama ding-dong. I thought that Pam Cruikshank had the most postmodern analytic response, risible that a group of businesswomen would be relying on a man to solve the problem. No laughter here. Thank you, Pam. Now, what of Freddie? Pete Ranson was very active in the debate. He cut our newlywed copper Harrison no slack and felt that he could have given Freddie just a stern warning. And while a few others agreed, I think most, including myself, did not. Now, Pete did call Freddie a prize A Pratt, and that was certainly the unanimous opinion of our Facebook group. Peter Mabette said Freddie is a tosspot simples, and almost all cheered Johnny for standing up to Freddie. Janice Betson summed it up. I'm beginning to wonder if Freddie is a bad'un rather than just a stupid one. He has no conscience, always blames other people, no empathy, lies all the time. A psychopath, a sociopath. Turning to Rex, we asked, is Rex destined to be the next Jazzer, but without the sense of humor and assertiveness? Always in there with the pig, struggling to make ends meet, and pining away for the woman he secretly loves. Paul Schluss predicted that by next year at this time, Toby will be dead, and Pip and Rex will be raising Rosie. He went on to specify that Toby would be killed in a gin factory explosion. A bold prediction indeed. While Andrew Horn and Effa Pheasant just thought that Toby would be buggering off to Brighton. Yeah, what has happened to that ex-girlfriend of his? We also declared where Alice treads, trouble follows. Karen Valerie Hodgson summed it up. Alice is such a numpty these days. Alice used to be the smart, level-headed, sensible one. It seems she's been entirely recast. An alcoholic, loudmouth, rude, complete foot-and-mouth imbecile. And that's being kind. Finally, we turn to Elizabeth, Elizabeth, Elizabeth. We ask the hordes, how bad a parent was she being? And the near-unanimous reply back was, the worst. Andrea Williams was being kind when she said, I think she is portrayed as a real parent, given the dire circumstances. But no one else was so nice to her. Valerie Bayless was horrified. Anna Kenyon called Lizzie a terrible parent. And Rob's Shosh noted that this family would keep a family therapist in business for quite some time. I like Jean Bell's response. I felt Lily's pain and heard her poignant response about Freddie's inheritance. Lizzie will come to regret her behavior. Finally, the week ended on a high note with the wedding of Fallon and Harrison. Many wondered whether they'd make it to the altar, but I was not one of them. I wish them congratulations and a long and happy life together. Though, with their wedding, Yokel Bear raised the mystery of Chris's ever-changing accent. Discuss for next week, please, when we return you to our regularly scheduled host. I think it's Yokel Bear, or is it Millie Bell? Anyway, Witherspoon and Angus Haggis out.
One of my favorite things about Witherspoon is hearing him swear in English with the American accent, yes. Boggling off.
A couple of points from that. One of the earlier commenters, David Kinsella. Isn't David Kinsella? There is a David Kinsella who's quite a famous movie director. So I'm predicting Dumpty Dum the movie. Underwhelmed yet again by one of my amazing predictions.
Is that why you're wearing your shades? Are they preemptive shades on the Dumpty Dum picture?
That is the second point I want to raise. I did not submit that photograph to Roy Field. I think he broke into my Apple iCloud and stole it. I mean, we're very lucky you haven't got a new shot.
Thank God you're just wearing shades.
That's the only fully clothed thing on my hard drive. No, I don't remember sending him that. I think he might have nicked it from my Twitter feed.
He ferrets
or
around,
like that.
You know. He's a proper little ferreter. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, well. There are worse photographs he could have chosen, but I do look like a pompous, stuck-up twat. Oh, it's mortifying, but I don't care. I'm not vain. I'm not vain in any way, am I, Lucy?
You're not what?
I'm not vain in any way, am I, Lucy?
No.
I promised Auntie Jean that I would mention this, and I'd do it anyway, even if I wasn't going to promise her it. There's a Bristol meetup on Sunday the 16th. It's going to be a lunchtime thing, so save the date. Full details will be forthcoming, so keep an eye on Twitter and Auntie Jean's feed, and we'll give it another mention. So that's the 16th of September. And that's in Bristol. There we are. Right.
And I am a pillock because last week I told everybody that we were doing a show in Brighton on the 11th. We're not. That's a Thursday. We're doing it on the 11th of... No, we're not. We're doing it, for God's sake, Lucy, we're doing it on the 7th. 7th of October.
Right.
At Birmingham Town Hall with... This is going to be great. With Emma Grundy, Susan Carter, and Kerry Davis. It's just going to be amazing. And the tickets are selling quick, so hurry up. It starts at 3, goes on for about 1.5 hours. Trains are good to Birmingham. There's a lot of them. Yes, so please, please, please come.
Excellent. Lucy.
7th of October.
October the 7th. 11. The 7th yes. of October.
Yeah.
Lucy. Would you like to hit us with some tweets of the week?
I'd just quite like to hit you, really. But anyway, Little Kim. Ah, Fallon's band. Happy memories of the time she had an actual personality. Jim Kavanagh. Off on holes for 2 weeks, not taking any computing devices. On return, I shall expect at least a murder, an offer on the Aldridge's farmhouse, a hilarious not outcome to the storyline about that fucking llama, 2 wins for cricket, and Shula on the game. I think only one of those you got, Jim. John. Audrey Ann. I am thinking it would be better to make Josh a silent character and give Ben a voice instead. Perhaps he is less of a wanker. John Reed had that scene when Shula suddenly appeared in the Lower Loxley office. Shula. Only me, Elizabeth. Jim, how the fuck did you get in? I'm changing the locks. And Matt Underwood, tweet of the week. Anyone else think Fallon Burns sounds like something you might catch in Thailand?
She's still Fallon Rogers, though.
Yes.
Good for her.
I can't, again, which is another description. I can't imagine her wanting to change her name.
Ah, dear. Remember, to get in contact, you can send us a voice message via SpeakPipe on the website or call 0203 031 3105. That's 0203 031 3105 to leave a message. If you enjoy Dumpty Dum and want us to keep doing it, please become a Patreon subscriber. It's around £2 a week. All the details are at patreon.com. Your subscription pays for the cost of the equipment, Lucy's silk pajamas and my pink champagne. it also means...
How did you know about my silk pyjamas?
Well...
That's not on the picture as well, is it? Am I standing behind you in silk pyjamas? Are they reflected in your sunglasses?
You know what? That is one thing I was worried about. I zoomed right into the screen and thought, shit, what... You never know. You never know.
God,
anyway, your subscription does not pay. Your subscription does not pay for any champagne socialist paraphernalia. We promise. We promise.
It does pay for my pajamas, though, but that's another
matter. All right, okay. Because they're Dumpty Dum pajamas. It also means you get access to lots of extra content. We do notice who subscribes. And we do mention you, and we are genuinely grateful. You can find Royfield and Lucy at Dumpty Dum on Twitter, and Lucy is at Lucy V. Freeman, and I can be found at Naked Fingers. Thanks very much for listening, and we'll talk at you next time.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com. Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.